text, this verse jumped out at them, and they felt like it really became the basis of this whole series and this whole collection of resources. Because as they looked at the story of Jesus's birth, which Advent, of course, leads us up to, they realize that so many of the people in these stories dream, or they are caught up in God's dream for the world. Joseph receives messages, very important messages through dreams. The three magi, they make their way to Jesus, and not because of a dream, but when they arrive, they're warned in a dream about how to go and when to leave. And so there are actually literal dreamers in the story of Christ's birth, but so many of the people, John the Baptist and Mary and Elizabeth and Simeon and Anna, so many people might not have had literal dreams that we know about, but they received and they discovered and they responded to God's dreams for the world. That's what dreamers do, as we're talking about them here. They receive, discover, and respond to God's dreams for the world. And the question we're going to be asking together is, what if we received and discovered and responded to God's dreams for the world? Now, how are we going to go after that question? Well, you know, typically on a Sunday, you know, I might preach for 20 minutes. Okay, 25. Sometimes 30. Fine. Fair enough. But not during Advent. Not during Advent, which I know breaks your heart. Here's what Advent is going to look like here in the coming weeks. I am going to offer a reflection about 10, 12 minutes on the text for the week. Again, there are four lectionary texts. We won't have time to look at all four of them. We'll look at one or two. And then we're going to enter into a time of discussion. And I'll explain how that's going to work in a little bit when we get to that point. And then we'll end with a time of action, of taking what we've been reflecting on and talking about and acting on it in some way. And there'll be ways, different ways that you can do that. So that's what this morning is going to look like. Let's start with that reflection piece. And here's one of the texts for this week in Advent. One of the lectionary texts is Psalm 80, 1-7. This is from the New Living Translation. I'll read it here for us. Please listen, O shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph's descendants like a flock. O God, enthroned above the cherubim, display your radiant glory to Ephraim, Benjamin, and Manasseh. Show us your mighty power. Come to rescue us. Turn us again to yourself, O God. Make your face shine down upon us. Only then will we be saved. O Lord God of heaven's armies, how long will you be angry with our prayers? You have fed us with sorrow and made us drink tears by the bucketful. You have made us the scorn of neighboring nations. Our enemies treat us as a joke. Turn us again to yourself, O God of heaven's armies. Make your face shine down upon us. Only then will we be saved. So this psalm, Psalm 80, was written just before Israel was attacked and overtaken by the Assyrian Empire. In other words, this psalm stands on the edge of an earth-shattering crisis. Now, I don't know about you, but this seems like a strange passage of scripture to use to kick off Advent. I mean, if you're wondering what the lectionary is, you might be thinking, is this thing legit? Like, what's going on with the lectionary? Why would it choose to put Psalm 80, a psalm of lament, here at the very first week of Advent? Because this is a lament, a crying out, and you can hear it if you listen. You have fed a sorrow, the psalmist writes. We have had to drink bucketfuls of tears. It feels to the psalmist and to the people of Israel that God has left them and that this calamity that stands at their doorstep is going to completely overrun their life. And I don't know, again, you know, isn't Advent about Christmas presents and joyful carols and gingerbread and Christmas presents, right? I mean, isn't that what this whole thing's about? This seems like such a strange way to begin Advent until you pause and realize that lament is actually an incredibly bold and courageous act of hope. Lament is a way of keeping God's dreams alive. Now, I don't know what you do when you encounter pain or difficulty in your life, when you stand on the edge of a crisis or a crisis has already overtaken you, but I often find myself trying to escape the difficulty, escape the pain, escape the frustration. And I do this in a variety of ways. I might try and downplay the difficulty. I'm fine. It's all fine, I might say. I might just try and downplay it. I might try to dismiss it. What pain? You know, I'm good. I might try to demonize the difficulty. In other words, I try to blame someone, cast all of my attention and energy onto someone who is at fault for whatever is happening in my life or in the world that I don't like. Or I might try to numb the pain. You thought I was going to put another D word here, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Well, okay, fine. I will then. Okay, this would be one way of numbing the pain, right? You binge Netflix. You get lost in the social media world. But of course, there are lots of ways other than downloading to numb. The point I guess I'm trying to make is that we have all kinds of ways at our disposal to try to escape. And yet it never really works. These forms of escape may give us some brief relief, but whatever promise they offer to us is short-lived. And I want to suggest to you that lament is the opposite of escapism. That to lament is to stay engaged, and to lament is to continue to dream. When we say, as Israel did here in Psalm 80, that this is not the way that things are supposed to be, when we say that in a lament, what we are also saying is that there is a way that things are supposed to be. We're saying both of them when we lament. Right? I mean, why would I lament the pandemic, any of its many consequences and difficulties? Why would I lament any of it if it was the way that things were supposed to be? Right? The reason why I feel the angst and the pain and the difficulty and the heartache and the loss is because I know deep in my bones that this is not the way that things are supposed to be. Right? Why would I lament the person on the street who is homeless and hungry? Why would I lament that situation if it's the way that it's supposed to be? If it's the way it's supposed to be, well, then it's just the way it's supposed to be. But I don't do that. at least not when I'm in my best place. I lament it. I pause and realize that something is awry. Things are not as they should be because there is a way that things should be. See, we lament because we know that there must be more. We lament because we are determined to not give up on God's dream for this world. Can you begin to see how lament and hope are actually really tightly bound to one another? When a problem or when pain comes into our life or into the world, there is the temptation to not say or do anything about it, to downplay it, dismiss it, demonize it, numb ourselves from it. And when that happens, we end up becoming silent. In a sense, we fall asleep. But lament, and you could hear it in Psalm 80, is anything but sleepy. It is loud. It is boisterous. It is courageous. When we lament, we face whatever is wrong or unjust, and we look it square in the eye. Lament is the opposite of escape. It's a bold naming of what is actually happening and a bold declaration that things can be different than they are right now. They must, in fact, change. See, there's no pretending in lament, no denying or dismissing. To lament is to be awake, wide awake to what is happening in our lives and in the world, calling it what it is, and then demanding that it change. Perhaps demanding that we change. Perhaps even demanding that God change. You read lament in the scriptures, ooh, they are bold, often quite in a straightforward manner, saying to God, you need to hold up your end of the bargain here. Jesus implores us to stay awake. Mark 13 is another lectionary passage for this Sunday, and it is quite a chapter, often called an apocalyptic sort of chapter. And scholars don't quite agree on just exactly what Jesus is talking about in Mark 13. Something that he is talking to his disciples about the end of the world, the end of all things. Others see Jesus in that moment telling his disciples about the end of the temple, the end of this period of Israel in which the temple was the center of its life. We can have that debate. It's actually a very interesting conversation to have. But either way, everyone agrees that in Mark 13, Jesus is saying to his disciples that something significant is going to happen. And before it does, and in the midst of it happening, it is going to be hard and painful. And so the disciples do what any one of us would do. They ask the question, when's this going to happen? They want to know, understandably, hey, when is this going to go down? And Jesus says, no one knows the day or the hour, not even me. Translation, don't make the when your focus. Jesus says your focus, your attention needs to be on staying awake. And then he ends Mark 13 with this. It says, it is like a man going on a journey. When he leaves home and puts his servants in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to stay awake. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening or at midnight or when the rooster crows or in the morning, lest he come suddenly and find you asleep. And what I say to you, I say to all, stay awake. Jesus knows how tempted we might be to fall asleep in the midst of difficulty and crisis. In just a couple of chapters here from Mark 13, remember, Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane on his final night. And what happens to the disciples in the midst of that difficulty and that tumult and that really, really hard moment? They fall asleep, literally. They don't and can't seem to stay awake. And that's true metaphorically as well. When difficulty comes, our tendency is to try and numb it, push it away, deny it, dismiss it. Jesus says, when the world seems to be falling apart, that's not the move to make. I'm telling you, you have to stay alert. You need to stay awake. And one way, friends, that we stay awake is through lament. So there's the reflection part of this morning. Let's enter into some discussion here together. And here's how this is going to work. We'll get to the action after that. We're going to offer you the opportunity to have you break into some groups. And we'll do some breakout rooms like we've done in the past. Let me say a few words about these breakout rooms. Number one, there's going to be 3, 4, maybe even 5 households in each group, which means that if you are like me, believe it or not, this is the way that I am if I was sitting where you are sitting. If you're someone who tends to be more analytical, you're maybe a little slower to speak, maybe groups can feel a little intimidating sometimes because you might feel like you have to say something. These groups should be big enough that if you're that wired in that sort of way, there's no pressure for you to carry the conversation. And it won't just be you and one other person who you may or may not know. And so there shouldn't be any awkwardness in that way. I'm just kind of saying that to all of you who, again, are maybe like me a little bit. These groups will be big enough that there should be, I think, plenty of opportunity and people to carry a conversation. And we won't be in these groups for long, really just a few minutes. So it's going to be pretty quick. So even if it is maybe a bit of a stretch out of your comfort zone to be in these groups, it's not forever. All right. When you're in those groups, you're going to discuss a question or two that I'll offer to you all as a place to start the conversation. And then we'll end those breakout rooms and have you come back to this space that we're in. And through the chat window, or if there's some really brave souls, by unmuting ourselves, we'll just share a thought or two that came up while you were off in those breakout rooms. So very simple, not long, handful of people together to consider a couple of questions. Let me say one little thing here before we break you into these rooms. If you have multiple people on your screen right now, or you will for this conversation we're going to have, I want to invite you to change the name on your Zoom window to reflect the names of the people who are on the screen. Right now, you see my name probably on my little window. And that works. I'm the only one here. But if I had other people with me, I would change that. If you don't know how to do that, you can click on the participants tab on your kind of main Zoom screen, and it should bring up your name with a more button. If you hover over your name, and then you can choose that rename feature and add your name, add a new name or many names. All right. So here's how this discussion will work. Here's what we're going to have you share and chat about really quickly. First, you'll introduce yourselves. This will need to be really quick. Hey, I'm so-and-so. You can give your name. Maybe everybody could also add how long they've been coming to the branch. And it might just be a couple months. It might be many years. How about your name and how long you've been coming? And then here are the two questions for this part. What are some ways that a person could lament. How can lament be expressed, in other words? Think creatively. We obviously know it can be written, right? We saw that in Psalm 80, but you could have an airplane, right? And airplane smoke up in the sky, that could be a way of it, right? You get, I mean, this is anything goes. It's just a creative, really brainstorming here on this question. What are some ways that we could lament? And then what do we lament when we lament? And I'm not thinking here specifically like I want Deb Hitziger to name the specific things in her life that she would like to lament. I'm talking more generally, what happens in lament, do you think? What sorts of things do we say or do we express? For example, sadness might be something that we express in lament. So again, these are not like really complicated questions. They're not meant to be. They're just meant to get some conversation going. So Teresa, are you going to be able to break us into some groups here?
Yep, I got them ready.
Awesome. I think we're ready to go, folks. We'll give you 3 or 4 minutes. We'll give you a little warning when we're nearing the end of that time. So again, a quick introduction. These questions will be in the chat window. They might already be there. Probably they are, because Teresa's that kind of on top of it person. So if you lose track of the questions, they're right there. And off we go. Helpful, or an idea that someone had for how to creatively express lament. And you're, of course, welcome to unmute yourself if you would just rather say it. I know it's so scary to do that, but what came up in your conversation about how we could lament or what sorts of things we express in lament? So some expression of fear, confusion, yeah, and a lack of ability to fix whatever is going on. Sadness, despair, anger. Thanks, Elizabeth and CJ. Yeah, it's good. All those things. I mean, it's really whatever you're feeling would be what can get expressed. And then some ways here, writing a song, painting a picture, music, physical activity. Yeah, I bet for some people that is a really helpful way. Looks like some other things that can get expressed or might be exhaustion. Sometimes we just need to say we are tired, right? Injustice, fear, loss. Yeah, working and not quitting. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it does not end in lament. That would be the hope, that we don't get stuck there, right? But that we turn the corner, we're able to hold both the whatever it might be, or fear, anger, disappointment, and we hold that and we hold hope. Mm-hmm. That is awesome, Lisa. I can only imagine the healthy release of getting out on those skates, and can only imagine it will do nothing more than that, except maybe come and watch you do it. Good. Yeah, the separation and the loneliness. Was there anyone who didn't lament that, you know, in the last few days? Even if maybe you were with people, you probably weren't with all of the people, or even, of course, just in the last 8 months, really missing that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's from the Law family, punching and screaming into a pillow. Like we do need to find ways to get our anger out. This is coming from a guy who has confessed to you before, I'm no good at that. And if that is a way of doing it, it's a safe way, it doesn't harm anyone. Yeah. Yeah, right. Giving yourself permission to cry, and even choosing purposefully to watch a movie that might help those emotions express themselves. It's great, everybody. Beautiful. All right, we're going to go back into those same groups and we're going to discuss one more question. So this is the last time for today. If you're thinking, how many times is he going to make me do this? This is it. Yeah, I know some of you are. I know it. I see you shaking your heads. It's okay. It's okay. One more time, one more question, not even two questions this time, just one. And the question is this: what do you think is the relationship between lament and hope? Is that an easy relationship for you to see? Is it a hard relationship to see? And how do those two things work together, do you think? So what is the relationship between hope and lament? Teresa, send us away. Welcome back, everybody. All right, let's do the same thing. I'm curious what you had a chance to again briefly, but you know, what was said? Would you throw that in the chat window or unmute yourself and just share what was mentioned about this connection between lament and hope? I see some of you typing, so we are waiting eagerly. Naming lament can help. It's a form of acceptance, yeah. An apology, that would be interesting to hear you say more about that, Elizabeth and CJ. I think that's right. Hope it might stay just an idea, maybe a bypass if lament is not experienced. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're kind of trying to cheat, maybe, if we try to skip lament. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hope is in us. It's deep in there. It's part of who we are. And that's right. Hope is the balance. These two things are both needed, right? That's good. Yeah, Jason, I think that's true. All good stuff, everybody. Yes, this is great. This is great. Yeah, that's helpful, Laws. Thanks. Good. It's a little, perhaps, a little counterintuitive that hope and lament would be connected, but I think as you all are helping to make clear, they, in fact, are deeply connected and need each other, in fact. So good. Well, that gets us to the action. You know, if in fact this is that important, then we need to do something. Talking about it isn't enough. And so I'm just extending an invitation to you this morning to lament. And we're going to take a minute or two, again, not a ton of time, but I want to invite you to scrounge around, find a piece of paper, or use your phone and make a note on your phone, or lots of creative ways were mentioned earlier about how to lament. And so if something else, like grabbing a pillow and yelling into it is what you need right now, then you should do that. And that's not really a joke. Like, I invite you to lament in whatever way would be most meaningful for you. If you are writing, if that's the method you choose, this is a possible framework you could use. You could begin your lament by naming whatever it is that is not as it should be. What is wrong? What's unjust? What's causing the difficulty or the pain? What's not as it should be? And then, this is a critical step, remembering God's faithfulness, purposefully thinking back on ways in which God's faithfulness is something that you are able to see and recognize. That remembering helps propel us actually forward with hope. If we know that God has been faithful, then we're more able to move into the future with hope. And then naming what we need could be a way to end your lament. God, I see that you have been faithful. Here's what I need in this moment, in this particular context. Just one framework. In no way do you have to use it. It's just there if it might be helpful. So let's take 60 seconds, a couple minutes, and we'll give you a chance to start to put this into action. If you are like me in this moment, you're just getting started. I'm about 4 sentences in and realizing, oh boy, I have some things that I need to say out loud. So in no way, of course, is our time here the end. My invitation, if not my strong encouragement to you, would be to practice this week. When you are feeling whatever you are feeling, to name it. If you can, remembering God's faithfulness to you in past times of difficulty, and then asking for what you need, and hoping that all of that then inspires movement and hope. All right. Thanks, friends, for participating in that as you did. I want to invite you to grab your candle. We're going to come out of this time with an attention on hope. And so you need your candle for this. And the workmen's are going to lead us in the lighting of this candle. They'll tell you when to light yours. So just keep an ear out. And Brian and Laura and crew, whenever you're ready.